Jay Mariotti here, and if we remember the 2010s in America as a period of disruption, evolution, activism, crisis, scandal, and technological hysteria, then sport effectively has symbolized the world around it. Never mind that the decade in some ways ends as it began. The Patriots are still cheating. Tiger Woods still dominates conversations. LeBron James is very much a force. And football remains king despite existential challenges to its violent life and death rich white male owners reality. A deeper look demonstrates, though, the radical changes throughout the decade. Ever think we'd see legalized sports gambling, analytics going mainstream and changing sports forever, events streamed on palm-sized smartphones, athletes not sticking to sports, with a washed-up quarterback mounting a historic kneeling campaign, and a lesbian soccer star eviscerating the president of the United States, the Cubs winning the World Series, a Greek freak as the NBA's reigning MVP, and the Golden State Warriors as the franchise of the decade, building from ground zero with front office wisdom and Silicon Valley innovation to reach five consecutive finals, winning three championships while centered around a kid next door, Stephen Curry, who heaved threes from the moon, and a brooding mercenary, Kevin Durant, who wound up moping his way to yet another destination. As encouraged by their personable coach, Steve Kerr, the Warriors also captured the mood of turbulent times by sounding off frequently on the commander-in-chief. And they didn't cheat or cut corners, unlike the Patriots. That's why they are the sports team of the decade. As for the sports person of the decade, you'll have to wait for the man with the velvety voice to do his introduction on Unmuted.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
The sports person of the decade debate only crystallized recently, as there are many candidates. Let's see, Tom Brady, Mike Trout, Serena Williams, Roger Federer, Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, Michaela Schifrin, Simone Biles, Sidney Crosby. But you know who? LeBron James, rising again in a season of redemption, has spanned and defined the decade like no other, still front and center in trying to deal with Giannis Antetokounmpo on the court while dominating the evolving media climate with a growing footprint in Hollywood and a candid lens into his likes and lifestyle on social media. I did not say most popular athlete because LeBron is as polarizing as he is all-encompassing. Like the Warriors, he has ventured into robust political activism, sometimes to a fault. And though we may not have liked his stances or the crass mobility from Cleveland to Miami to Cleveland to Los Angeles that Kevin Garnett recently ridiculed, or his petty feud with Curry and his passive-aggressive use of social media, do say this, James has empowered athletes to take control of their careers and their lives like no figure before him. He isn't always likable, sometimes far from it, yet you must admire a man who never has strayed into legal trouble in nearly 20 years in the public eye, stands tall as a proud parental role model, built a school in his native Akron, Ohio, and has remade himself as a leader, and yes, the NBA assist leader as he contends for his fourth NBA title with the Lakers, all as he turns 35. I don't make a habit of playing Nike commercials on this podcast, but the latest LeBron ad works.
Here comes James. He's all We always hear about an athlete's humble beginnings. How they emerge from poverty or tragedy to beat the odds.
Cleveland fighting for a trip to their first finals.
They're supposed to be the stories of determination that capture the American dream.
All along me, I can hear crying.
They're supposed to be stories that let you know these people are special.
All around me, I can't hear. So what is gonna happen now?
But you know what would be really special? There were no more humble beginnings.
The 2020s likely will belong to Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Giannis, Luka Doncic, Mike Trout, Garrett Cole, Naomi Osaka, and really who knows who else. But none will embrace the totality of athletic superstardom as James has. Will he ultimately play an NBA game with his son, Bronny, then go on to own a sports franchise? Yes, I think he will. Hell, I think LeBron is just getting started. And two hopes for an uncertain future in sports. No more tanking, one. Two, a renewed emphasis on heart and passion over data. And three, a personal note, please, better journalists and fewer fanboys in the sports media business. Please. The time has arrived for Jerry Jones to tap out. As a businessman, I realize he is legendary, having turned a $150 million investment in 1989 for the Dallas Cowboys into a $5.5 billion behemoth, part of his net worth of $8.5 billion, as he has been hugely instrumental in steering the NFL into untold prominence and prosperity. Well, so the bleep what? As a football man, Jones has been a joke for so long that even the Jerry mockery has long grown stale. Troy Aikman is absolutely right. Jerry has been too stubborn to relinquish control, and the consequences have turned absurd. A loss to a flawed Philadelphia team that finally will end the head coaching run of Jason Garrett, who has been protected by Jones as an adopted son ad nauseum way too long. This team, the Cowboys, too much talent to keep spitting out uninspired, poorly executed performances, and they certainly don't deserve to make the playoffs. The defense broke down too often against a hot, determined Carson Wentz. And if Dak Prescott's shoulder was ailing, why wasn't the game plan all about Zeke Elliott? Oh, I don't know, maybe because Zeke, fat contract and all, doesn't always gut it out. And so much of the play calling in that game was hideous. Jones is expected to make a run at Urban Meyer, Elliott's college coach. If Meyer wants that aggravation, Meyer might have his pick of jobs in the NFL. I know a lot of you cannot stand the man, and you can't stand his controversies. You know what? In the NFL, nobody cares. This is not college football, and I think he will have his choice of Dallas, Washington, maybe other jobs. Meanwhile, here was Jones in his latest and hopefully last post-mortem.
And play a better game than we played, and thought right up until the very end of the thing that we could come in and make some plays and get it done. It is a very meaningful game because of the circumstances within the league, and we've had times this year a lot when we didn't play as well as we wanted to play, but we had in mind stepping back up here and getting on a run and having some good things happen. This is a disappointing setback for that locker room and for all of us, and I know it is for the fans.
Again, Jerry, go away. You're almost 80. Just go away. The NFL formula remains intoxicating despite those who decry the sport's dangers. The big games are gripping off into the final seconds, and the Super Bowl tournament this year is wide open. How many teams could win it all? I have three in the AFC, Ravens, Chiefs, Patriots in that order, but I'm down to two in the NFC. 49ers and Saints in that order, as I think San Francisco will take care of business in Seattle this Sunday and score the number one NFC seed after the Seahawks laid an egg and couldn't stop running back Kenyon Drake and lost its top two runners in a devastating upset loss to Arizona. Seahawks could have clinched number one seed, home field advantage, with two wins at the end of the season here. Instead, they're going to be back to five, I think, and that could be the difference between an early ouster and making the Super Bowl. And the Patriots aren't dead yet, with Tom Brady throwing blocks, did you see that, and drawing emotional chants from the Foxborough crowd and leading a rally over the formidable Bills. Yet, doubts do remain about the offense's viability and Brady's ability to stay healthy in the playoffs. And of course, as we await results of the league's investigation into Son of Spygate, you know my feeling. Drop the hammer, suspend Bill Belichick, ban the Patriots from the playoffs. There should be a cumulative effect from Spygate, Deflategate, Son of Spygate, Rub and Tuggate, and who knows whatever else has happened in that compound somewhere between Boston and Providence, Rhode Island. As Roger Goodell told the Wall Street Journal about past Patriots transgressions, and I'm quoting Roger, of course that's a factor. Okay, but I also know Goodell. He wants nothing to overshadow the postseason, so expect a verbal reprimand. Remember, the Patriots already have said, hey, we screwed up. It was unintentional. We screwed up. So a verbal reprimand, a big fine, maybe the loss of a draft pick, and then it'll go away. And don't be shocked if it's announced. This is how leagues do things. I know these things. Sometime between Christmas and New Year's, okay, when you're out partying and you're watching college football semifinals and the NFL season is ending, the regular season, yeah, he'll just announce it and then you'll forget about it and then January will be here and then it's over. Mark my words. That's what's going to happen. And it also was telling how Belichick sounded so relieved after that victory, and it wasn't just about winning the game. And that likely does sew up a number two seed for New England. No, I think Belichick knows that his team is not going to get waylaid by the commissioner as it should be. And I think he's relieved because they got caught red-handed. Here was Bill.
Yes, sir. It's a good feeling here today. You know, this football team really competed hard. They did a great job today. Wasn't always perfect. Buffalo's a good football team, obviously. And you know, they're going to be playing football here in the next couple weeks, too. But really proud of our guys. Just, you know, competed for 60 minutes, ended up making enough plays. And
now more than ever, America is rooting against New England while adopting football's newest sensations, Jackson and Mahomes. And no team is providing more entertainment than the 49ers, who might not be ready for the championship leap yet, but are creating considerable fun in trying. You saw Jimmy Garoppolo lead the winning drive with third and long magic the other night. The 49ers believe in Jimmy G, as Fred Warner said after that victory over the Rams.
That's our guy, man. That's franchise, man. Jimmy G, everybody has utmost confidence in him and his ability, and he keeps proving it week in and week out, day in, day out. So.
Then you have the Saints, who look to be the number two NFC seed. America agog again about Drew Brees, who 3 weeks from his 41st birthday has replaced Brady as the ageless wonder we marvel about the most. Brady is managing games these days, but Brees continues to be remarkably productive as he continues to make history every week, maximizing record-setting Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara as Sean Payton eyes another Super Bowl championship after two recent heartbreaks. Brees and Brady are at the top of several relevant categories in quarterbacking lore right now, including most touchdown passes. They're going back and forth. And while Brady's future is somewhat murky, Brees, I think, has at least a season or two left in New Orleans if he stays healthy. And the natives down there in Louisiana, they are sensing a special few weeks ahead. Imagine LSU and Joe Burrow winning the national title in the Superdome, followed by Brees and the Saints winning the Super Bowl not far away in Miami. It could happen, but the Saints' defense has been vulnerable against winning teams, and they could lose another shootout to the 49ers, as we've already seen. And the Freddie Kitchens disaster is about over with Odell Beckham Jr. throwing his helmet after scoring a touchdown, then jawing at the so-called head coach in a sideline tantrum. That only hours after Browns management leaked that Beckham would be back with the team next season. Let me say this, no coach will win with the toxic likes of Beckham, Baker Mayfield, and Myles Garrett. Still, Kitchens was a very bad idea. And what a ridiculous scene in Carson, California. The visiting Las Vegas-bound Raiders, with more fans in L.A. than the two teams that call L.A. home, playing a Chargers team with no fan base in L.A., the cautionary tale for any carpetbagging owner, such as Dean Spanos, who wants to move a franchise without doing proper due diligence. When you think about it, the Chargers should have been the team that moved to Vegas so the Raiders could share L.A. with the Rams. But the NFL did not want the Raiders and their element of rogue fans in that new Inglewood Palace, and Jerry Jones was too busy hooking up Stan Kroenke with Spanos, and they can't stand each other now. So you have L.A. ticked off at one team, the regressing Rams, and L.A. apathetic about the other team, the Chargers, who can't sell season tickets in the new stadium, actually have had to use silent counts at home games because of the vast number of opposing fans in the stands, and now have no quarterback to market as Phillip Rivers breaks down. Might Tom Brady sign with the Chargers with Jim Harbaugh as head coach? Think about it. Do I have to do Spanos' thinking for him? As for the Rams, is any player in the NFL more disappointing than Jared Goff, who was rewarded with a lucrative extension prematurely and now becomes the latest Super Bowl losing quarterback to miss the postseason the following year?
Yeah, it's extremely disappointing. I think, you know, that you never envision something like this when you start the year, and it's not even, you know, close to the standard that we want to hold, and it's you know, like Sean said, it's sickening. It's something you never want to go through, and something that, you know, myself personally, and I know our team will be just so so driven to not feel this again. It's not a good feeling, and we have what we need. We just need to put it together, and for some reason this year we weren't able to do it all the time.
Wait, Jameis Winston has thrown 25 interceptions. Maybe he's more disappointing. Yet Jameis also has thrown 30 touchdown passes. He's going for the 30-30 club here. He could throw five picks next week. What is Bruce Arians doing? It's the very epitome of being counterproductive. The good news for the Giants, Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley flashed their talents for the future. But the bad news, they beat the Redskins and probably lost the number two pick in the draft, the transcendent pass rusher Chase Young. Now the Redskins, by losing, are going to get Chase Young. This is the time of year when hot seats become electric seats. The firing of Tom Coughlin as Jacksonville's lead football boss is symbolic and somewhat troubling. His old school discipline act no longer works in 2020. We're almost there. As Jaguars players openly revolted and filed a boatload of grievances with the Players Association. Coughlin was not physically abusing players, but he was a hardline badass. And owner Shad Khan no longer could have his back, even though Coughlin was most instrumental in putting that small market franchise on the football map. This marks the official end of coaching dictatorships in sports. The athletes have all the power now, or most of it. And that probably is not a good thing. Just check out Odell Beckham Jr. with power. There should be a middle ground striking a balance between a guy like Coughlin and a guy like Jalen Ramsey, who demanded a trade and got his wish. Once Dallas is eliminated, the Cowboys will be joining the Panthers, Redskins, and most likely the Giants, Jaguars, Browns, and Chargers as teams looking for new head coaches. And Meyer has made it clear he wants to coach in the NFL, where his controversial past, as I said, won't face the scrutiny it does in the college ranks. The Redskins could be the fit given the wild whims of Dan Snyder and the presence of Dwayne Haskins, Meyer's last quarterback at Ohio State. Would Meyer somehow spark a bidding war between Jones and Snyder? There's got to be a punchline in there somewhere. Meanwhile, Matt Patricia keeps his job in Detroit somehow. But Kitchens, Pat Shermer, Doug Marrone cannot be afforded similar patience. Also remember this, the NFL has just three black head coaches, two if the Chargers' Anthony Lynn is fired. And Josh Gordon was suspended for the sixth time in 6 years, the fifth for some form of substance abuse. Obviously, the NFL's empathetic stance is not working for Gordon. He has been suspended indefinitely. And if this were an employee in any other workplace, he'd be gone for life. I know it's the holidays, but how many chances is one man allowed before he clearly is taking advantage of the NFL's benevolence? For all the pot shots the college football playoff is absorbing this year, what is not to love here? What am I missing? Why did TV ratings jump this season when they're fading in the NBA and in Major League Baseball? This is the first time in recent memory when three undefeated powerhouses, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, will decide a national title in two collisions. Not three, two, you'll see where I'm going. Starting with the inevitable Ohio State-Clemson Classic on Saturday night in the Arizona desert, it's inevitable. Stay on that game for all 4 hours. It'll be 4 hours. It'll be worth all 4 hours. The only better playoff involving the four teams would have included a fourth powerhouse. Instead, they had to settle for Oklahoma, which will be bombarded by another Joe Burrow pitch-and-catch clinic, and won't stay within, what, 30 points of LSU in Atlanta? And 30 points, that might be conservative, considering the Sooners' best pass rusher, Ronnie Perkins, is out after a failed drug test, and safety DeLaurin Turner-Yell is out with a broken collarbone. Burrow is going to have a record night. I have LSU 51, Oklahoma 20. So focus on Clemson, Ohio State. Dabo Swinney is playing this hokey disrespect card, and I suspect he's playing possum too, as the Tigers have yet to play their best game this season while buzzing through a mishmash schedule. But Clemson undoubtedly is the biggest name in the sport now, not Alabama, attracting the nation's number one recruiting class, including a top pro-style quarterbacking prospect out of Orange County, California. That's new territory for good old boy Dabo. He's usually in the South. Now he's out here. Well, why not? USC, UCLA suck. USC brings back Clay Helton. Why not? The Buckeyes' defense is vulnerable, as Wisconsin showed in the Big Ten title game. And I think this is where Trevor Lawrence stops being a long hair idol and resumes his status as football's next great dropback quarterback, the NFL's presumptive top pick in 2021. Meanwhile, counterpart Justin Fields has been dealing with knee issues and will not be 100%. Sweeney and Clemson live for these moments. They've been in these moments for a long time, while Ryan Day is still getting used to them as Meyer's successor in Columbus. America doesn't like Meyer, but the state of Ohio will miss him dearly in this game. I've got Clemson 27, Ohio State 23. And what would these results mean? It would mean Burrow not only one-ups Ohio State, the program from where he transferred because Dwayne Haskins was ahead of him there, but he becomes the intense rooting interest of Ohioans in the national championship game. His emotional Heisman Trophy winning speech has inspired nearly 400,000 in donations to a food bank in Burrow's native Southeast Ohio, an impoverished region where his high school stadium now bears his name, Joe Burrow Stadium. And the Bengals are frothing to take him number one overall in the NFL draft in Cincinnati as the anti-Baker Mayfield. It's Joe Burrow's world right now, and if this keeps up, we're looking at one of the defining American athletes of the Roaring 20s. I've been waiting to use that. The Roaring 20s. So far, the NBA season has been quite forgettable. The Daryl Morey tweet that might cost the league billions in Chinese business. Too many superstars sidelined by injuries, with LeBron now dealing with a muscle strain in his back that sidelined him for a game. The delay of Zion Williamson's debut, and more tanking teams in the league than you have contending teams. in the league. Oh, and Isaiah Thomas became the latest NBA player to confront a fan going into the stands in Philadelphia after a 76ers fan, according to Thomas, quote, held up both of his middle fingers and said, F you, bitch, three times, end quote. It wasn't F you either. Isaiah should not have gone into the stands, which earned him an ejection, but these fans in the NBA must stop the racial taunting. And that's what this is, folks. That's the way the players are viewing it. And I agree with them wholeheartedly, in this case, over something as silly as the fan missing out on a Frosty, part of a promotion for which fans in Philly are awarded a frozen dessert if an opposing player misses two free throws in the second half. I've never heard of that before. The Sixers hardly set a strong deterrent when they decided on Sunday that the banned two fans who were involved would only be banned for 1 year. That 1 year, I thought, how about for life? Like in Utah? Nope, 1 year. That's so typically Philadelphia. Here was Thomas.
I'm never going to be disrespected in any way. My dad taught me at a young age, don't ever let anybody call you out of your name. And it doesn't matter where I am, that's not going to happen. So when I missed the first free throw and made the second, I'm running back and a fan has both of his middle fingers up and said, F- three times. So then the timeout goes and I go in the stands to confront him. I say, don't be disrespectful. That calm. Be a man. I'm a man before anything, and be a fan. And his response was, I'm sorry, I just wanted a Frosty. Because if you miss two free throws, I guess the fans get a Frosty. So that's what happened, and I walked back. And I told my security who it was so he can get kicked out the game, because that's no way, shape, or form that should be allowed at all. I've been in the league for a while. Fans are going to say whatever they want. Don't ever call me out of my name. That's not, because I would never do that to anybody else. And I think that crossed the line. Like, I got kids. I got a family. Like, that's not okay at all. So I just went to go tell him that. No disrespectful way, as calm as I am right now. And those are the three things I said, and that was his response.
Yes, the NBA has issues, and Commissioner Adam Silver seems to be panicking by floating this bit of madness, a 30-team in-season pool play tournament that would pay $1 million to each player on the winning team. This is wrong on so many levels. You have to bribe players with money to gain their interest. You're paying them big money as it is. And wouldn't Kawhi Leonard and other superstars who view $1 million as maybe chump change rather have 5 days off that would come with not qualifying for an 8-team single elimination tournament? Furthermore, who cares which team wins a tournament in mid-December? I'm going to forget that Adam Silver ever brought this up. So you might say the season starts on Christmas Day and Doc Rivers has fired a salvo that will make the Lakers-Clippers showdown even more intriguing. LeBron has said often that he is no fan of load management and that if he's healthy, he'll be playing. He's not healthy at the moment, so he didn't play on Sunday night. That's a direct shot at the Clippers, who continue to manage the health of Leonard and sit him for the second games of back-to-backs, much to the disgust of purists, old-schoolers, and consumer advocates such as me. Rivers was asked about the Clippers' approach opposed to LeBron's approach. The gun is still smoking.
I don't know what theirs are. You know, I think theirs is whatever LeBron says it is, to be honest.
That
makes a lot of sense to me. But, no, I think I like what we're doing. I think it's the smart thing to do. And, you know, who knows? We'll see at the end.
Doc should be focused on fixing what ails the Clippers, who blew a big lead to the Rockets and then lost their composure with Lou Williams trying to attack an official and Patrick Beverley also tossed with 3 minutes left in a close game. That's not how you win a title. That's not how you capture Los Angeles. Meanwhile, the Lakers were smoked by the Bucks with Giannis showing off his new three-point shot, hitting 5 of them. If this dude can consistently hit mid-range shots and trays, Antetokounmpo officially will be the most unstoppable player in the sport. as if he isn't already. And you noticed the imaginary crown that Giannis placed on his head after hitting his final three that night. This after he shot a playful wink at the TNT camera. It was almost out of character, as above all, Giannis strives to remain humble as the Euro interloper who rose to conquer this sport.
Just try. I think the most important thing is try to stay humble. Like, you know, when you win MVP and you win 60 games, it's hard. Like, you feel like, okay, you know, what else? But at the end of the day, you know, like, I realize, and, you know, my family realize that I was supposed to be here. You know, I wasn't number one pick. You know, AD was, you know, like, LeBron was number. Like, I didn't supposed to be here. I didn't supposed to, you know, go against these two beasts. So I'm just happy that, you know, I'm here. I'm happy that I'm going through the process, and I'm always want to, you know, be better, do better for my team, and that's what gives me joy, you know, like winning games, that's one, but improving and like seeing the result at the end of the day, man, like in all these shots that I made today, I've made these shots like 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and seeing them going into tonight, you know, that gives me joy, that makes me want to work in other parts in my game, and that I can make those shots in 3 years from now, you know, that's what fills me up, you know.
Giannis and the Bucks play the Sixers in another must-watch Christmas game, once looking like a multi-team crapshoot with the demise of the Warriors. The NBA season currently appears to involve only six title contenders, Lakers, Clippers, and dare I say the Mavericks, with Doncic in a shockingly thin West, and the Bucks, Sixers, and Celtics in the East. At the moment, the Nuggets with Nikola Jokic lagging don't seem ready, nor do the Utah Jazz. And the Rockets, I can't figure them out. Russell Westbrook must continue to mesh better with James Harden, and that's a lot to ask. And Harden's solo artistry does not ever translate into postseason prosperity. I could deal with a Lakers-Bucks finals. And here in late December, I'm going to go with that forecast. Hold me to it. I wish to thank Garrett Cole for reminding us that baseball, amid its myriad of issues, still can be approached with a kid's enthusiasm. Of course, Cole was the same guy who wore a Boris Corporation cap in honor of his agent minutes after Houston lost Game 7 of the World Series, but maybe Cole was just disgusted with the Astros, as many are these days. Most athletes who sign a $324 million deal might be gripped by pressure or become so bogged down in a ginormous number that they lose sight of the fun quotient. Cole preferred to open his Yankees press conference as the highest paid pitcher in baseball history by bringing proof that this was a dream come true. He posted a sign in front of all the media that he kept from his youth, and it said, "Yankees fan today, tomorrow, forever." That's what everybody lost sight of when they were assuming Cole would sign with the home county Angels of his youth. When he would go to Angel Stadium in Anaheim, Cole would root for the Yankees.
I would just like to say, I'm here. I've always been here. So
that's great. You kept it.
I did.
I would issue a warning about the fickle nature of New York media and fans, except Cole is so dominant right now on the Hill, he might not give them reason to be upset for a long time. I'll be surprised if Cole is not ruling October and pitching the Yankees to their long-awaited 28th World Series championship. They are back again as the best team money can buy in a sport of widespread tanking, but at least their hired rotation gun is a likable guy. By the way, you would think with his financial clout, Cole could have forced the Yankees to kill their rules about no beards or, you know, hair below the collar. Nope. So Cole had to go out and get a haircut. He showed up with no beard and a hair trim. I guess he can deal with that at a cool $1 million or so per start. Still, the likelihood of a 2021 labor impasse increases, with tensions rising between MLB and the Players Association, which is demanding via a grievance that the Yankees pay the remaining $26 million on the contract of the released Jacoby Ellsbury. Yes, Ellsbury might be the worst free agent signing ever in baseball, but if he did not violate the deal in getting unauthorized medical treatment last month, as the Yankees are claiming, then he deserves the payout. Baseball continues to swim in money despite the preponderance of tankers, and the revenue-shared coffers just grew $1 billion richer after MLB's 10-year deal with Nike, which now will place its swoosh on the front of jerseys, altering classic uniforms worn by the Yankees and the Dodgers for decades. Oh, but baseball is poor. Cry poor. After the free agency swirl of the winter meetings, difference-making players do remain available as this podcast is being recorded. Josh Donaldson, Nicholas Castellanos, Hyunjin Ryu in free agency, and superstars such as Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, even David Price in potential trades. So what the hell is everybody waiting for? Bid! At least the White Sox of all franchises are trying to seize an opportunity and reach the postseason for the first time since I left town. That was a long time ago. Signing Dallas Keuchel for $55.5 million over 3 years in what has been a shockingly productive offseason for the miserly Jerry Reinsdorf. Yet the Blue Blood Dodgers, Red Sox, and Cubs have signed zero multi-year deals between them, with the Dodgers reportedly reluctant to go to 4 years for Donaldson as their already jilted fans grow angrier. The Yankees, by the way, can void Cole's decision to opt out of his contract after the 2024 season if they add one more year and $36 million to the back end, which means, at the least, the total value of the Cole deal is $360 million over 10 years at the minimum for a guy who works once every 5 days. And as we enter a new decade, no topic in sports is more explosive than compensation for prominent college athletes. The NCAA views California's historic Fair Pay to Play Act as a threat, as President Mark Emmert has met on Capitol Hill with U.S. Senators Mitt Romney and Christopher Murphy, trying to protect the NCAA and its 1,100 member universities in their failure to address the biggest injustice in college sports. That is the failure to allow athletes to profit off of his or her name, image, and likeness. The problem is the NCAA will be allowed to skate and continue to pocket those monies as long as states have different laws in place. Emmert can argue, as he already has, that the NCAA requires a universal model. It's going to take a long time for states to go in lockstep with the other states. Somewhere there must be a middle ground here, because what's happening is abominable. Athletes who aren't compensated, circumventing the system by taking under-the-table money. The biggest upheaval will continue in college basketball, where James Wiseman, potentially the number one pick in the next NBA draft, left the Memphis program and hired an agent. Wiseman was recruited to Memphis by former NBA star Penny Hardaway, who has been associated with the Memphis program since his playing days, and 1 year before he became the head coach last year, paid for Wiseman's family to move to Memphis. This is an NCAA no-no. Obviously, if you let one coach pay for a move, they'll all pay for a move. Yet Wiseman's direct bolt to the NBA portends the end of one-and-dones and brings into focus the new path of players going directly to the NBA out of high school. This will further damage and dilute college basketball, already smeared by bribery scandals at numerous big-time programs, including top-ranked Kansas. Though Kansas got beat the other day, so they are not top-ranked. Maybe the gods of sport have just cracked down on Bill Self. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, how will you remember the decade in sports? Loaded question.
Jay, I liked your player of the decade. LeBron definitely is up there. Brady, I give a lot of credit to Tom Brady and what he's accomplished in this decade, which is what? Mostly his 30s, I believe. But for me, and this shouldn't be a shock, I got to go with Tiger. When you think about where Tiger was at the start of the decade, as a human being, as an athlete, as a media personality, as a star who had been battered, literally and figuratively, all of his own doing, and to where he's at now as a human being, as an athlete, as a celebrity, as someone we just enjoy smiling on a golf course, I give it to Tiger. That's why. For me, impactful to where he was at the beginning of this decade. And I remember some of those tournaments in the beginning of the decade where it was bad. And it was bad in the sense of, this just is never going to turn around. It's never going to be the same as me, who grew up, if you will, watching him play golf and became a golfer because of him. To see where he's at now, that's my player of the decade, Jay.
And Chris, have you ever seen a football team waste talent more than the Cowboys? And is it time for Jerry Jones to buzz off into the sunset?
Well, of course it's time for Jerry Jones to buzz off into the sunset, but he's never going to. He is Al Davis. He's the new Al Davis, just with a lot more money and a lot more cachet and probably better suits. Although Al Davis did have those jumpsuits, which I always liked. The Cowboys, is there a team more inconsistent than the Cowboys? Think about how they destroyed the Rams and how they looked last night against the Eagles. I mean, just bad. It's really sad. But again, inconsistent football, when you look at the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Rams, these teams that are all in contention. I guess the Rams are officially eliminated now, but were in the Super Bowl last year, and how inconsistent they are week to week. It really makes you just appreciate looking at Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, and even the Patriots, although they've had a few bumps along the way the last few weeks. Still, just think about that.
Chris, what do you make of Adam Silver's in-season tournament idea? Is it a shrewd innovation or desperation to fix sagging ratings? I say the latter.
Yeah, they got to fix sagging ratings. They got to fix games that nobody wants to watch and that are frankly just boring in November and December. I don't like it because I still can't really understand it. And I've read it several times and I can't make any sense of it. Call me dumb or call me just not really open to it because I don't really care, Jay.
And Chris, did Giannis Antetokounmpo officially rip the baton out of LeBron's hand in Milwaukee the other night? Or was it just one game in a long NBA season that still is taking shape?
No, I think he didn't rip it, but he definitely put his hand on it for a little bit. And he may have pulled it away, and then LeBron said, wait a minute. But there's a little panic going on, and it's subtle. It's, hey, listen, now we know LeBron was hurt in that game. It's only one game. It's only one game, but then they lose to the Nuggets. Now LeBron didn't play. Christmas will be that because what's happening for Laker fans right now is that fear of what happened last Christmas, as the great George Michael and Wham once said. So they need to beat the Clippers. LeBron needs to play in order for everybody to calm down, because just a few weeks ago, L.A. was talking about how they were going to be right up there with the Bulls at 72 wins and the Warriors. And gosh, they're on pace to do this, and maybe they'll win more. And now everyone's expectations and heart has been brought down to earth just a little bit, Jay. So it'll be interesting to see how everybody feels after Wednesday, after the Christmas game. Now, if they lose that Christmas game, panic, I think, ensues in Los Angeles.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Was Russell Westbrook telling the truth when he said a Utah heckler told him to, quote, get down on your knees like you're used to, end quote. The heckler, his name is Shane Keisel, was banned from Jazz games for life last season, and now the U.S. Army veteran is suing the Jazz and Westbrook for defamation and emotional distress, claiming he lost jobs as a security guard after the episode. This is delicate stuff. We're talking about a U.S. Army veteran here. The lawsuit claims the Keisel, 31, merely told Westbrook to wrap his knees so he could play better. If Keisel has witnesses, or better, tape, I don't know if he does, Westbrook could be out of luck. And might the fan in Philly sue Thomas for distress? Hey, it's a twisted world, folks, but I think you already knew that. In the next decade, I would like to ban boxing, and for that matter, Ultimate Fighting, though I'm losing that battle. Every boxing event, usually streamed by Renegade Network, DAZN, DAZN, seems to devolve into a debacle, such as the other night in Phoenix, where fans pelted Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. with debris and liquids. What kind of liquids? When he quit after the fifth round. How is DAZN, which is fronted by disgraced former ESPN boss John Skipper, going to survive amid such chaos? Eventually, these boxing fans are not going to buy the streaming for these idiotic events. With college basketball in turmoil, at least we have a season where the talent level is spread more evenly than we've seen in ages. Five of the top six teams in the AP Top 25 lost last week, meaning March brackets will be busted, which is always fun. So let's hope the likes of Kansas, Louisville, Arizona, and Auburn, all tainted by scandal, cede to the likes of, I don't know, Dayton, Butler, San Diego State, and hoops-phobic Penn State. You've got Chris Beard and Texas Tech lurking. I really can go without a season of Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, and the usual Blue Bloods. I also can go without Jim Boeheim, who called the lack of home crowd support sickening, that was his word, for an average Syracuse team struggling against a lowly opponent during winter break. I also can go without Jay Billis, for that matter. Want to know what's truly sickening? No evidence of animal cruelty or other crimes was found by California prosecutors during their probe into the shocking spike of horse deaths at Santa Anita Park. Oh, it's merely coincidence that 49 horses died during a 12-month period ending in June and 56 since July of 2018, including the 4-year-old gelding Mongolian groom who collapsed during a Breeders' Cup race and was euthanized on the sport's grandest day. This report, and never trust a task force, is a scam intended to protect the sport and the revenues it generates in California. Fact is, doping horses remains legal here in California, and it's time for Congress to force this filthy sport to cleanse itself or go away. And Vernon Butler Jr. of the Carolina Panthers was ejected for punching the Colts' Jack Doyle, then flashing his middle finger at the Indianapolis crowd. Happy holidays, Vern!
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Let us hope and pray that the 2010s also rid the world of sexual predators such as Larry Nassar, the U.S. Olympic team and Michigan State physician who sexually assaulted hundreds of girls and women. Now maybe the 2020s will lead to the purge of greedy lawyers. A year after USA Gymnastics filed for bankruptcy after a flood of Nassar-related lawsuits, victims of abuse have yet to receive even $1 from that organization. But the lawyers have. With more than $7 million in legal fees approved thus far, including $600,000 plus billed individually by three lawyers. Shame. One attorney is charging an astounding $1,200 an hour. Normally, the rate involving corporations with $500 million or more in assets. So the brave girls and women who went public taking the stand against Nassar will end up with a few bucks for their agony, while these damn lawyers walk away with millions. In their own way, these lawyers are as creepy as the predators they were fighting. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha! I'm the innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down.